March 22nd, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series. I'm your host, Downtown Donnie Brown, coming to you from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown in our beloved Banting Park home. I am joined by my extraordinarily talented producer, the mighty Max Martinson, and I'm really honored to have as a guest one of the candidates for the Waukesha School Board, Angelique Byrne. Angelique, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks, Don. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. How's the campaign going so far?
I think it's going really well. We have done 6 events for the public, inviting public to come in and talk to us, and we've had a lot of people come. So we've been doing many things to hear from the community, which has been great.
Terrific. And I know you've had some events at the library, which I think is a great venue for what you're doing. Any other types of, what are some of the other types of events you've been hosting?
We were invited to do a forum or a listening session with the Sophia churches. They invited their congregations or their contacts to come and meet with us. So that was great. We were invited to the community forum, which was at the library put on by the League of Women Voters.
Nice. And Stephanie Love the league. Sam
and I did go to that. Unfortunately, the other 3 candidates declined.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. Mostly, yeah. That's unfortunate.
And the other ones were just set up by us, just inviting people to come out, trying to get multiple dates out there for people to hear from us and for us to hear from them.
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned the League of Women Voters, Angelique, because I remember a time when the presidential debates were organized, overseen, I guess would be maybe a more proper term, by the League of Women Voters. And it made for a much more objective dialogue. And for some reason, they were kind of pushed out of the equation. I don't know that. But I'm really glad that they're still able to be effective at the local level. There's a really proud history there, and one that obviously has deep roots here in Waukesha with your fellow Carroll alumnus, Theodora Yeomans. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. But enough about history. Let's talk about your history. You've been an educator for more than 20 years. And you've worked in very unique and distinctive areas of education as a teacher, I guess a coach or instructor, if you will, and you've been involved in curricular development. Tell us a little bit more about that and how that helps you in terms of your candidacy and why people should be taking a hard look at your resume, if you will.
Sure. I've been an educator for over 20 years. I started off as a teacher. And I was lucky enough to work for a long time in the Kettle Moraine School District, which was really focused on innovation in schools. So really thinking about how do we reach every student, not just that standardized formula, which we knew a lot of kids maybe weren't being reached. So we were heavy into personalized learning. And what that meant in Kettle Moraine was some individualized charter schools that had programs based on students' passions. But what was most interesting about that was that it was interdisciplinary. And we know from research on things like literacy, the way kids really remember things, how it hooks in your brain is for it to be practical application, to have multiple experiences using the same themes and topics. So that's kind of the basis for what we did. But it was also a lot of working with community businesses, talking to them about what do employers need for their employees to be successful in the workplace. And we weave that all into the education. So that's really the foundation to how I saw how education really could be different and how we could reach kids in different ways. So that did lead me to take a job doing some work, doing some curricular development for a similar charter school in Milwaukee that was trying to do some similar things. And within that job, I also was the impact coordinator. So I was building out internships programs with businesses, as well as building out their dual enrollment program with UWM and MATC and some other local colleges. As well as we had a very unique program in that school that allowed kids to stay for a 5th year of high school. And part of that was taking college classes and part was internships and part was anything else they needed. So what I saw in all of those environments was that when you really did change the way school looked for kids, especially our more disengaged kids or didn't fit the mold, they really, really excelled. So I think there's room for improvement. And I know you can't do that on a large scale often in big schools, but there's ways you can do that on smaller scales. I currently work at the Juvenile Justice Center in Milwaukee County.
Okay.
And I'm the instructional coach there. So I coach teachers. Wow. So there is probably the most inflexible place for school. Yet we're doing really innovative things to try to prepare these students to be able to go back into the world and be successful both in school and elsewhere. So that's my resume in a few minutes.
No, that's terrific. Thanks for sharing. And on a side note, I really think you and my wife would have a lot to talk about, because most of her 20-25 year career has been spent doing curricular development and instruction for charter schools. So I think you two could start your own school.
Yeah, but there's lots of amazing things that could be done.
Sure. But because you have a mix of public and charter school education, is that fair to say?
Yeah, so I've really worked in all environments. I started my career in Catholic school. My first job was at Mesmer High School. Okay. And then I worked in charter schools within the school district of Kettle Moraine. And then I did work for a private charter school that is chartered out of UWM, so a state charter in Milwaukee. And then I've worked in traditional public school, and then now in this alt-ed environment at the Juvenile Justice Center. So I would say I've done a little bit of all types of schools.
Sure. And does that resonate with potential voters when you explain your unique background and how that can be leveraged to as a member of the school board to affect some positive outcomes?
Yeah, I would say most people that we've been talking about are most concerned with our local public schools. So I don't know that they have that full scope or even the interest of all of those things. What I've learned most from talking to people is people just really don't understand public schools and their value. So even though I've worked in all those different areas, what I also know is that 90% of our students go to public schools, and our most disadvantaged students typically go to public schools, right? Kids who don't have someone filling out a charter application, or kids who live in a more rural school district, right? So that value of public schools, but a lot of people don't understand that those public schools being strong also like help your property values. You know, if people start to not value your public schools and more kids are leaving them, it's harder for realtors to sell homes. So there's so many layers. And I think most people just don't know.
Sure. Now going off of some of the bullet points in this, it's very well-developed campaign postcard. It was paid for by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin from the state. Okay. And it's got yourself, Stephanie Fidlin, Samuel D'Amico. So you're very much birds of a feather in terms of your approach to effective education. One of the things you're talking about is demanding transparency in tax dollar use and long-term planning and preventing school closures. What are some of your ideas for that in a nutshell? I know we don't have too much time, but what...
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think that's a really important question. One of the things that as a district resident, but then teaching in a nearby district, I always felt like I never got as much information here in Waukesha as I did in Kettle Moraine. The school funding for both districts is very similar, actually, per pupil funding. Waukesha makes up some more with more title funding because we've got students with low income, so that helps a little bit.
Sure.
But I never felt like I knew what was going on, and I would watch board meetings for both districts. And even right now, I know exactly what Kettle Moraine is proposing as options for the declining enrollment and the funding we get for the state. They have four different things on the table. They're asking for community input. But here in Waukesha, it feels like everything's very reactive. So like when in Whittier and Hatfield closed, no one knew ahead, and people were even asking questions, and sometimes they were told like, no, we're not doing that. And then all of a sudden it was happening. So I think that transparency for me is transparency in the long range planning. Here in front of me, I've got some, you know, statistics and data about the declining enrollment. Yet I am hearing from the people on the board or some of the other people running like, no, but we're doing great because we're on track to pay off our debt. But that doesn't tell me what you're doing about the shortfall that's going to happen over the next 5 years and what the options are. I think that those options are important, and then to get community input on those options. And to be honest, I have my administrator's degree, and I went through training for school closures. We may have to close schools. I'm not one that would say that that's not on the table. It's definitely what you need to do at some point. But what people don't realize is, yes, we might have 700 less students 5 years from now, but that's 700 students across 12 grade levels. That doesn't always constitute closing an elementary school. So are there other ways that can keep our music teachers from burnout? Right now, I just heard one of our music teachers is going to be spread between three schools, two high schools and middle school. That's not sustainable for our teachers. So when we talk about transparency and long-range planning, we need to put that on the table. Like, yep, we're saving money or we're cutting so we don't go to referendum, but this is what it looks like.
Sure. Here's one. I mean, obviously you talk about expanding elective offerings to meet future job needs, particularly in STEM careers. You're a parent of two STEM students in our system. Congratulations. But as a writer who had kind of more of a liberal arts background, is the other side of the equation, the English, the writing, the history, the social studies, are those parts of the curriculum declining almost by design? And what are your thoughts on that?
That's an interesting question. I think it varies school by school, partially from interest. So like South has a robust arts program, right? Like they have 5 art teachers. That's amazing in this day and age. So I do think a lot of your electives are driven by choice of students as they should be. But I do see, I have the elective offerings here right in front of me, is that we have some things in like the areas of technology, but not some of the areas that are more up and coming. So I would just love to see maybe more of an update versus maybe an increase. And I would love to see more alignment with getting kids to WCTC. Right now, the website had said that in 2023, there was 41 kids that were in the dual enrollment academy. That's over 3 high schools. For me, that's a really low number. Yeah. So how are we helping kids see these different avenues and then having pathways to make that happen?
Sure. Interesting. Thank you. And then, of course, you're talking about developing innovative programming to build essential communication, collaboration, and critical thinking skills. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm an educator, so I know a lot of teachers. You know, I just talk to them because I've known them from different connections. And what I've heard over the last 3 years in Waukesha or 4 years as they started changing curriculums is teachers really felt like they lost their autonomy, that it was very lockstep in the curriculum, and that sometimes what was there wasn't all good for kids. There's some that's good, right? I'm an instructional coach. Mm-hmm. I've implemented curriculums. I would have a lot of the same values as you hear the board talk about. But I think you also need that with some flexibility so teachers can both bring in the things they think are good for that group of kids, but secondly, to bring in those life skills. Because if we're only focused on, we're reading this book, here are the tests, here are the essays you're writing, even some small speeches, but very traditional, you're missing some of those bigger life skills, like collaborative projects that are more in line with real life problems that are happening. So I would love to see a little bit more of a push of, what are kids actually going to do in jobs? And then how do we bring some of that into these curriculums as like final products or things like that?
Sure. So yeah, like you're obviously familiar with the AVID program. My daughter's a freshman at South and she's in that. And do you think that does a good job of maybe addressing those things for helping them build for the future, like critical thinking skills and essential communication and collaboration?
Yeah, I do. And I was AVID trained when I was in Waukesha. I think it's a great program. Yeah. What I have concerns about is who it's recommended to. So both my kids in middle school were very, very, very different learners. My daughter, school was easy for her, high achiever. My son struggles a bit, has ADHD. And I would say that the one of my two students that needs AVID would have been my son. The person that was recommended was my daughter. And I saw that when I was working at Les Paul in my art class. I would say to kids like, hey, you taking art next year? You know, really high achieving, amazing kids that also loved art. And they'd be like, oh, no, I can't because I'm taking AVID. And then all my other students who I thought maybe could have used AVID to help, especially on the philosophy of AVID, were not the ones getting recommended. So I think that's a problem. Also, I would love to see those AVID the Avid binders or strategies and all the things they're doing or that critical thinking weave more into the classes than the standalone piece. Okay. I think that's where you're really going to find more success.
Sure. Interesting. And is that something too, as a member of the board, you can influence that, those kind of adjustments, I think, to how you enroll students in Avid?
Yeah, I think those are the questions that should be asked if you're on the board. You know, like, here's something we have that's working well, but here are some things we're hearing about it from families, from teachers. How can we improve it? Because a lot of improvement in schools is incremental growth and improvement, not always these huge major shifts of doing something completely different.
Sounds great. Now, here's a question, Angelique, and I don't want you to take it personally, because my first time running for office, I lost by 12 votes, literally to a ghost. It was an incumbent who announced a couple months before the election that he was dropping out, but by state law, his name had to stay on the ballot. And because I was too arrogant to invest in lawn signs, I lost by 12 votes. I was eventually appointed. But my point being is, you ran for school board, I believe it was about a year or year or two ago, and weren't successful, but you ran. I shouldn't say that, because anytime someone that commits themselves to running in a campaign, they've already won, because they're participating in the system. What are some of the lessons you've learned from that first campaign that you feel are helping you or guiding you in this second run?
Well, I think the first time, because it was new, it's really a lot to do. And unfortunately, as local nonpartisan elections have become polarized and then have unfortunately become partisan, you have to run like you're running for something that is a larger partisan election. So we really focused this time around, because we had a little more time, because we were a little more set, was on meeting more people. So that was our goal this time, was how can we reach more people by talking to them, and not just door knocking where you're catching someone off guard, but larger conversations. So I think that was the biggest thing that we changed. I think, you know, last time a lot of people still voted for us. Stephanie and I got just around 9,000 votes. I think I got a little less than her. So there's still a lot of people that we reached, and, you know, hopefully the second time around, more people are talking to their friends and we have a little more name recognition.
Sounds great. And I'm glad you mentioned Stephanie, because she'll be my podcast guest next week. Now and then Sam D'Amico will be my second podcast. He's already in studio. So, but in the time we have left, which is under 3 minutes, Angelique, what would you like listeners to know about you and your candidacy that we haven't discussed?
Sure. I think the biggest thing is that I really want to make schools good for all kids. I think often we look at things that are averages, standardized test scores, ACT scores, and they're one indicator, but they're not the strongest indicator of all kids. I can tell you from a former art teacher, I had a lot of kids who are doing amazing things now and were amazing in school, but those test scores weren't the best for them. But what was the best was these unique, innovative programs that helped them get these career connections and real life skills. So I think that's the biggest thing. That's my goal as a school board member.
Okay. Terrific. And you said you're going to be hitting the bricks today and knocking on some doors. What else will you be doing the rest of this weekend to and in the time you have left to promote your candidacy?
Yeah, well, I've got one more email to write that I'll go out to people. I've got a few more yard signs to get out to people. But yeah, knocking on doors, this last push is really, really it for the last week.
That's terrific. Are there specific neighborhoods you're concentrating on, or are you just going all across Waukesha as far as
we have volunteers going all across Waukesha. So I take whichever route is available for that day, and hit the doors.
That's true. How many volunteers do you have working for you?
Oh gosh, I actually am not sure, but quite a few. I've got a big list of people we're emailing all the time and doing all kinds of different things for us.
That's a good problem. So Angelique Byrne, experienced educator with over 20 years, a STEM parent and a graduate of Carroll University. Thanks so much for joining us on This Week in Waukesha. Good luck with the rest of your campaign. Thanks to our listeners too. Please remember, safety is everyone's responsibility. Enjoy this beautiful weekend, and stick around for my next guest, fellow candidate for school board, Samuel D'Amico. Thanks again. Angelique, good luck, and I look forward to The vote is April 1st, April Fool's Day, and if you are a fool if you don't vote. So, again, thanks again for joining us, everybody. Stick around for podcast 2, and see ya!